KRWG's Garden Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org is brought to you by White Sands Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative, providing financing for landscaping and other home improvement projects. Offices in El Paso and White Sands Missile Range. Information at WSFCU.org. By the Santa Fe Grill, located inside Pickwick, where owner Juan Morales constructs specialty burritos featuring New Mexico-grown chili, including the green chili pork roast and the potato with green chili burritos. Catering available at sfgrillnm.com. Welcome to Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. Time now for KRWG's Gardening Confidential, the Fall Edition. Join us as we take a break from political talk to discuss an issue that is important to us all in the desert. What makes your desert garden grow in the fall? From what plants to plant in the fall, where to plant them, to when to water them. Ask your questions or give us your gardening tips at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or join Anthony Moreno at our social media desk with your questions or tips. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. You can watch the show live on Facebook as we live stream it. Our guest is the man who I like to call the man with the greenest thumb in the Mesilla Valley, Jeff Anderson, who is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. He is here to answer your questions to help your desert garden blossom. Let's move beyond xeriscaping on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Jeff Anderson, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. The spring edition was so popular that we decided to do it again in the fall.
Good afternoon, Edmundo. It's been quite a summer. We've had a really good time growing things. The weather's been very hot, as everybody knows out there. And it's been also very, very dry. So we haven't had our really good rainy season. It never really took place this year. We had a few rains. Some people got moisture. But overall, throughout the whole valley, there was very little rain.
What kind of reports did you get back from local gardeners as far as how their summer garden went?
The gardens were a real struggle. If you weren't out there pretty much every day watering, and I mean watering every day, your vegetable garden, that is, it was not a good scene. Most people had undersized vegetables. They had problems with a lot of burn, especially like salt burns on plants, and their gardens just didn't thrive. And that wasn't just vegetable gardens, but their landscapes as well.
What are some key benefits to having an automatic drip system versus manually watering your garden?
And I don't have an automatic drip system, so I really know the advantages of having one. The trouble is a lot of us like to go on vacation, or you never know when you're going to get sick or something happens, or it's 105 degrees outside and you just don't want to go outside and water. Well, the plants, they still need water. So having an automatic system frees you up from worrying about whether the plant got watered or not. And a drip system, especially on your plants, drips slowly. So it moves that water totally through the volume of the soil that needs to be wet up for the root system. A lot of times we water the plants, and it's almost like sometimes people say you baptize them. Mm-hmm. So you just sprinkle the water on their leaves, and it may freshen them up for a short period of time, but the water doesn't get deep enough into the roots, and after a few hours, they're wilting again.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation with Jeff Anderson and give us your tips. How was your summer garden? Did you have any success? What are you planning for your fall garden? Have you started planting your cold crops yet? Give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind regarding your garden. Let us know how your summer garden went. Jeff, what is a good hardy tree for our area that people should start planting? I've heard in the past that fall is a good time to start planting trees.
That is true. And I hate to over-recommend a particular tree, but there's one that's really great. And when I first moved here, there was only a few around, but now there's quite a few around. The city has planted a lot of them as well. And that's the Chinese pistache. It's extremely drought tolerant. The only trouble is that they're male and female trees, and they can vary in color. So people plant it for the outstanding red fall color that they potentially can have. However, if you get a female tree, it'll produce a lot of seed. And unfortunately, in our desert area here even, a lot of those seeds will germinate in places where you may not want them.
They will germinate without the male?
They will be cross-pollinated when they form the seed, but there are male trees and female trees in town. But it's just like pistachio nuts. It's in the same family group. You could eat the seeds, but they're so small, you know, there's nothing there. But the birds eat them. They deposit them all over landscapes. They come up, and they put down a real deep taproot right away, which is why the tree is so drought-tolerant. But you don't want them coming up all over the place. So if you're going to get one, you want to look for a male tree. Or there's one in particular called Keith Davy. And Keith Davy is a grafted selection of a male tree that turns outstanding, brilliant red in the fall.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation with Jeff Anderson, he is with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. We had this show on. The first time we did this show was the spring 2 years ago, and we only did it for 1 hour, and we were so overwhelmed with the amount of questions we had, we decided to expand it to 2 hours. And during that time, we were overwhelmed with the amount of questions we had during the two-hour show. We decided to do this in the fall to get people planting. You know, Jeff, there's a lot of advantages to living in New Mexico, and that is the opportunity to garden year-round.
That is correct. We live in the southern part of the state, so while we're not quite like California where you can pretty much put anything out that you want, we are in a mild climate area, so we can grow a lot of vegetables even through the winter. I think most people are probably familiar with our onion crop. We plant onion seed in October, and it germinates. It goes through the winter, and then bulbs up from May to August, anywhere from those times. We can also do a number of leaf lettuces, cabbages in January. And I thought this was the strangest thing when I first moved here. You plant iceberg lettuce seed.
Iceberg lettuce.
I always thought, why doesn't it freeze? And, well, we don't know why it doesn't freeze, but the little seedlings survive, and they grow through the spring and produce a nice head of lettuce later on in the year.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Or you can join us on our social media desk. We are live streaming the show. We've got some beautiful plants that you brought in. Now, these were plants that you purchased.
Yes, they came from Guzman's Color Your World,
which happens to be our gift certificate that we're giving away at the end of the show. What did you bring in today?
So it's getting time right now. I haven't seen pansies out yet, but pretty soon, like October, you'll be able to plant pansies. But they did have snapdragons and stock, and we also have the cold crops, the cabbages. So we got ornamental kale and ornamental cabbage, and I've got some heading purple cabbage and some leaf lettuces. So those are starting to show up and be available.
575-646-2212. We have a question from somebody who wants to know, they are new to the area. They want to know what's a good garden to start with. What do you recommend as a good starting garden?
Well, it all depends on where you live, because we live, we have the valley here, which has the clay soils, and then we have the mesas, which could be rocky or caliche or sandy. So it all depends on where you live, and then it depends on what your interests are. So if you're interested in cacti, there's a whole lot of things you can do.
And that is what I have. I have cacti. I have prickly pear cacti. I don't know the name of the other cacti that I've got, but it puts out a beautiful blossom every summer. And one of the things I'm enjoying right now is sitting out in my backyard, looking at the prickly pear and watching the birds come and devour it.
And eat them, yep. And a lot of people actually take the really good large prickly pears, and I know several people this fall have been telling me that they've made prickly pear jelly out of it as well.
So that's something I haven't tried. My prickly pear, they're not very large. They look to be about small size.
Yeah, they vary a lot. So you got to choose a cultivar or get some pads from somebody that has large fruiting types.
And planting prickly pear cacti is so easy. You just get a cutting.
You cut off a piece. You let it dry for a few days at least because it needs to heal over where you cut it. So that callus is over, and then you plant it. Generally, you should do it in the summer because they're not going to root very well in the wintertime.
Okay. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation. You can also join us on our social media desk where Anthony Moreno is standing by ready to hear from you. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World, where you can go out and look to start your garden. I know that Mr. Guzman there is able to answer questions for you as far as what kind of garden you are looking to plant, and he is very knowledgeable as well. But right now we have the man with the knowledge, Mr. Jeff Anderson, who is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. Let us go to our social media desk where Anthony Moreno is standing by. Anthony, what are people talking about on social media?
Well, we have some questions already in Mundo, and before I give those, I want to remind folks that they can like our Facebook page and watch the Gardening Confidential live on our Facebook page, where you can also ask your questions. We have a question from Donna, who wants to grow strawberries in the desert. Do you have any suggestions for Donna?
Yeah, strawberries are not easy here, first off, but you can do it. One of the biggest problems here is you got to keep consistent moisture on them. The second one, they tend to suffer from micronutrient deficiencies, especially iron. So you want to find a way to boost your iron content in the soil and make it available. And there's some organic ways of doing that, adding organic mulch, trying to add coffee grounds, some sulfur, some aspects like that. And if all else fails, you can use EDDHA iron. It's a chelated iron. And EDDHA iron is the only iron really that's available in our alkaline soils here. The other aspects with strawberries, they don't like the heat, so they may need a little bit of shade. And if you're not having enough bees there to pollinate them, you may have to hand pollinate them yourself with a little hairbrush.
So as you said, growing strawberries does take a little bit of work.
Probably a lot of work.
A lot of work, okay. A lot of work.
It's possible, but it's a lot of work.
Okay.
Now, we had another question from Natalia, who had a question about aloe plants. She says she had an aloe plant that was doing great, and suddenly it took a turn for the worse and died. She's wondering if she overwatered it or had it in a container that was too large. She wants to ask you, can either of these affect the quality of an aloe plant?
Definitely. So most aloes want to be in full sun. And most aloes, if you don't water for months, and I mean like 2-3 months, they're going to be just fine. The biggest thing that kills aloes is too much water, especially when you couple that with too much water in a shady condition and then cold soils. So aloes need a lot of sunshine. They need very well-drained soils. You don't want to overpot them in too big a pot, and don't overwater them.
Okay, so we have another question from Ernesto, who says he wants to start a flower garden in a raised bed. What can you suggest that he plant at this time of the year?
Okay, if you're going to do a raised bed, you want to make sure, first off, that you don't have any perennial weeds coming up through there, like Bermuda grass. Make sure all that's cleaned up first. Once you got your raised bed going, you want to make sure that you've got good soil in your raised bed. So taking and digging the dirt out of your garden and just putting it in a raised bed doesn't work.
So you have to work the soil that's underneath or that you're starting with?
No, you want to add really good stuff.
Okay.
So you want to get either some good potting mix. You can get some builder's wash sand.
Do you mix it in with the soil that's there, or do you just put it on top?
You put it on top.
Okay.
So you've got your frame built, and you make a good soil that drains well, that's got some organic matter in it. And then you can start planting. And it depends on what you want to plant in the fall. So if you want to go with fall annual color, the most guaranteed color is going to be in the pansies. Like I said, your snapdragons and some of your other cold crops will work. If you're going for vegetables, you could go with lettuce and spinach. You could go with fava beans, and there's a number of other things. We have a list in our office that we could send you through email that tells you, it's a planting chart, when to be planting different vegetables.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Garden Confidential. Good afternoon. I'm Edmundo Resendez. My guest today is Jeff Anderson. He is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. He is here to answer your questions to help your desert garden blossom in the fall and in the upcoming winter. Let's move beyond xeriscaping on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Give us a call, 575-646-2212, or you can join Anthony Moreno on our social media desk, where he is taking your questions and comments. You can also watch us live stream the show on Facebook. Make sure to like KRWG's Facebook page so you can watch the video and get to see some of the beautiful plants that Jeff Anderson has brought in. Let's talk about weeds. This is a challenge I had when I started my garden, is invasive weeds that live out off of I-70 and Rinconada. And I inherited this yard that was very sandy. While it was very sandy, I had these invasive weeds that I don't know the name of. What's a good way to start a garden before you start planting the plants and start planting the seeds? What do you do to kill off the weeds?
The first thing you need to do is identify what weeds you have. So, you know, there are annual weeds, and then there are perennial weeds, and then there's extremely invasive weeds, and they're all managed a little bit differently. So a lot of your annual weeds, a lot of people can take a flamethrower out there or use a pre-emergent herbicide or just use a hoe and get rid of them when they're very tiny. Once you let that plant grow up like kochia or tumbleweeds, you let those grow up, they produce, you know, thousands of seeds per plant. And then those tumble around or get dispersed somehow by the wind. And then you've got a big, huge seed bank in your yard. So then you've got to work at reducing the seed bank. And you can do that through mulching and some other different means, like I said, with a hoe or some pre-emergent herbicides. If you have perennial weeds like bindweed, climbing morning glory, that climbing milkweed, things like that, then you have to get a little more aggressive before you can start in a garden. And this is a good time of the year. We're in September right now. So the plants are starting to get ready to go dormant. So they're going to be taking all that sunlight energy that they've made, not the sunlight, but the chemicals properties that they've made, the sugars that they've made with the sunlight, and moving that to the root system to go through the winter. So this is a good time, and I know some people do not like herbicides, but it's hard to get rid of those weeds. And a herbicide like Roundup can be really beneficial in getting rid of some of the worst weeds. Now, you can get rid of some of those really aggressive weeds if you take the time. You have to go out virtually every other day and chop off the top of the plant and keep every piece of green that sprouts up off, and you can starve out the root system. So if you can be persistent and organic in that method, you can get rid of those weeds. But a lot of us don't have enough time to go out every other day to do that. So we need to resort to some of the chemical methods to knock out those perennial weeds that we can't get rid of.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to our phones where we have Alan. Alan, welcome to KRWG's Garden Confidential. You are on with Jeff Anderson.
Thank you very much. Hi, Jeff. I have a question regarding moringa. I was looking for something that was very drought tolerant, but was a good food crop for both people and animals, and kept coming across a plant called moringa. And it's raised in Africa and now apparently in Arizona and used for feeding people, animals. In fact, Kellogg's just is buying it and adding it to their cereals. Do you have any tips on how moringa can be grown? I live in the Jornada Valley north of Spaceport.
You know, I've had that question. I had actually a person come in that wanted to start a business raising moringa. I don't know if it'll grow here because it's tropical. It is totally tropical. And whether it can freeze to the ground and re-sprout, I don't know, because nobody's really tried growing it here. Sometimes we can get some tropical plants that are root hardy enough that they'll spring back. And it's been used in a lot of places, generally in tropical places. I know in Florida, where you don't get the freezes in California. But I don't know how well it would do here if you don't protect it.
Okay, Alan, thank you very much for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. You can also join us on our social media desk, where Anthony Moreno is standing by ready to hear from you. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World. Let us go to our phone lines. Ernst, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. You are on with Jeff Anderson.
Hola.
What's on your mind, sir? All right, Ernst?
Do I ask my question
yes,
now?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
All right. My question is, what the best time to prune your oleanders so they bloom next year?
The best time to prune your oleanders would be in the spring, probably about March or the beginning of April.
Not in the fall.
Not in the fall. Oleanders are native from the Mideast, Syria, over towards India. And so pruning them in the fall, they're cold already about 18 degrees. They can take a little bit more, but they're going to get burned around 18. So if you prune them now and we get a bad winter, they'll be freezing to the ground. So you don't want to prune oleanders in the fall, only in the spring.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind for your garden. What makes your desert garden grow? Do you plant in the fall? Do you plant in the spring? When are you planning on pruning your garden? Give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. Let us go to Alicia. Alicia, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind? Alicia, you are on with Jeff.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you. I have a honeysuckle, and it's kind of, it looks like a white moss or something around. I know the proper term isn't the joints, but in like little elbows of it. I guess it could be bugs, but I'm wondering what I can do naturally to get rid of whatever that white, I'm calling it mossy looking. It's kind of furry looking.
Okay, it's pretty hard to discern over the radio without actually seeing it. So my suggestion would be to, if you could bring us a sample into our county extension office at 1170 North Solano, I can actually take a look at it and see what it is. I have a microscope there. And
okay.
Or if you could take a really good picture, then you could send it to my email address.
What's your email address?
It's Lantz, L-A-N-T-Z, at nmsu.edu.
Okay. All right. I'll do that. I just was wondering if it's a bug and I'm not seeing the bugs or what.
Yeah, a lot of times I get people think things are insects and then they turn out not to be insects, or sometimes they turn out to be beneficial insects. So unless I see it, it's kind of hard to discern.
All right, Joy.
All right, well, thank you so much.
All right, good luck.
Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Join us for KRWG's Gardening Confidential with your questions on social media as well. You can join us. Let us know what's on your mind regarding your garden. Let us go to our social media desk, where Anthony Moreno is hearing from our Facebook Live and what people are saying. Anthony.
Yeah, we had somebody who is watching the Gardening Confidential Live on Facebook, on KRWG's Facebook page, ask, what is the best desert-friendly flowering plants for a xeriscape yard that has few falling leaves through the year?
That's funny, because I always think of what plastic plant can we come up with? But what's a good flowering plant that doesn't drop much in the way of litter that flowers through the summer? That is very difficult. There are some great flowering plants that are native here, like Tacoma stands, the yellow bells, or in Spanish it's called Esperanza. And I think that is one of the most beautiful flowering shrubs you can imagine. It'll go through the heat of summer with these brilliant 2-inch yellow flowers on it. Lantana has been great, especially the yellow one. It's very prolific in flowering. There are some of the salvias that are great as well. And you can get into, if you like something small, ground level, there are the rain lilies. So a number of the things aren't necessarily native to this area, but they're great and they're beautiful to look at. Besides, there are a lot of cacti. Cacti don't drop much in the way of anything. Some of the different barrel cactus, there's small barrel cactus, there's some of the eagle claw ones and things that you can look around and get. So there's all kinds of, if you look at architectural forms like that, depends on what your, like I always say, what your interests are in your garden. So what interests me in my garden may not interest you in your garden. And then, of course, there are a lot of summer annual flowers that occur in the desert. And one thing you can do is, if you're out on a hike somewhere, is pick some of those seeds and encourage them to grow in your own yard.
We also have another question from Glenda, who, she has a question regarding climate change. She wants to know, what effects of climate change have you seen in Doñana County?
I've been here 36 years now, so I have seen changes. In fact, next week, September 19th at 7 o'clock, there's going to be a lecture on climate change in this area given by the university at the health. One of those buildings. I can't remember. I got it down. It's over by the English building, whichever building
Health
that
and
is.
Human Services Auditorium?
That's it. Health and Human Services. Yes. So the climate changes that I've seen when I first moved here, and 36 years is very short in the time scheme of the world and how things are. But it used to be colder and rainier. Now we're drier and warming up. And I've seen the rain patterns. And when I first moved here, everybody used to say, July 1st, the rains come in, the monsoon season starts, and it's like clockwork, and it always rains on the 4th of July. Well, that isn't true.
It has not.
And you used to see the Oregon Mountains, the clouds build up behind them, and by afternoon they'd come over the mountain and it would rain, like clockwork. You don't see that anymore. We see very, very little rain, and what we're seeing is more violent patterns when it does rain. So climate change, and it's warmer. And what I notice a lot are some of the plants that were native to Arizona and may have made it over the border over by Hidalgo County are now common around here. So like the desert broom, that was a rare plant when I first moved here, and now it's seeding out all over our desert here. And it couldn't take the cold here before, but now it's become naturalized more so in this area. So that's showing me that climate is changing.
Okay, Anthony, do you have one more?
I do.
Okay.
We have a question from Carolyn, who wants to know, how about flower pots in the sun? What type of flower? She wants to know what type of flowers to pot that are really colorful.
Flowers that are a plant that are really colorful. I've been growing Kufia, the Vermillionaire. So Kufia is also called cigar plant, and it's been perennial here, does really well in containers, and it blooms all summer with these orange tubular flowers. So there's that one that's called Vermillionaire, the different Kufias. There's a bat face Kufia. The Kufias like heat, and they bloom really well here. What other flowers that keep on blooming?
One of the flowers I had very good success with, and that is roses. I had tremendous success with roses. They were very low maintenance. I just watered them every other day, and they just let out beautiful roses. And I lived off of Missouri in 25.
Yeah, roses do really well here, especially in the spring, and they're beautiful shows. And then again in the fall, they're beautiful. Midsummer, a lot of people experience salt burn on the leaves because our water has so much salt in there. And so, you know, you need to keep them watered. You need to give them a little bit of fertilizer, but don't overdo it. The flowers are going to be a lot smaller in the summer. And what are double flowers may come out single flowers, but that's because it's just so hot. And so you just want to kind of get them through that summer heat, and then they'll pick up again in the fall.
You're listening to KRWG's Gardening Confidential, the Fall Edition. Good afternoon. I'm Edmundo Resendez. With me is Jeff Anderson. He is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. You can join in on the conversation at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. We are live streaming the show on Facebook, so like us on Facebook and watch the show live and interact there with your questions or comments on what makes your desert garden grow in the fall and in the upcoming winter. Let us go to our phone lines where Maureen has been patiently standing by. Maureen, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. You are on with Jeff.
Thank you. I have a question about prickly pear. You mentioned it at the beginning of the program. I have one that a bird apparently planted many years ago, and it's enormous, and I really enjoy it. But this year it doesn't look so healthy. Is there anything special you should do to care for an enormous prickly pear?
Well, I'll tell you, as they age, they won't stay as green as what they were when they were younger. So they're going to actually develop at the base of the plant some woody-looking, corky bark texture. Mm-hmm. So that bright blue or green skin that they had is going to fade away into more of a barky-looking structure. And then you got to watch out for, they can't get cochineal scale, they get other bugs on them, so you got to watch out for that.
But should I spray them with anything?
Well, if they don't have any bugs, you have to determine that. But if they don't have any insects, you don't need to be spraying them. You just need to make sure that during the worst part of the summer, usually May and June, when it's super hot and dry, that they get a little bit of water, but don't have them on drips. I've seen people put them on drips and then they rot. So they can use a little supplemental water May and June just to keep them healthy through that period. But otherwise, they're pretty resilient, take care of themselves.
They are, yeah.
And if they get really bad looking, you can always cut off some pads and dry them out and renew the plant, start over again, or cut the plant back.
Okay. I may ask you another question. Another thing I'm having problems with is my rosemary. I have rosemary all around the front of my house, mm-hmm. and several sections just dried up. The plant started turning yellow and then went brown and then went dead. And I mean, this is there's a lot of rosemary out there, I'll put it that way. I live on a corner, and it's one side of my house and then in front of my house. I haven't determined, you know, what has caused it.
So do you live in the valley or do you live up on the mesa where it's sandy?
I live where there's caliche. I live in El Paso.
Okay. So rosemary is kind of ephemeral. So it can last for quite a while, but sometimes, you know, you get nematodes in them, and the nematodes will attack the roots, and then that can actually kill the plant. If the water isn't even, you know, in a hedge, depends on if you have it on drip, and people forget to look at the drip, you have to inspect it all the time because of our salts and calcium carbonate, and the water will plug them up. They may not be getting enough water, or they could get too much water. But the only thing, if they're really fading out, the only thing you can do is pull it out, inspect the soil, find out what went wrong in that area, and then possibly replant.
Okay. Who will inspect the soil?
You'll have to do that yourself. There isn't really anybody to do it for you.
Okay.
So you have to make the observations. There is a county agent down in El Paso as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he can make a house call for you there, but... you can discuss to him what's going on.
All right.
Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, the fall edition, let us go to Joy. Joy, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. You are on with Jeff.
Hi. My question is, what are the best desert fruit trees to plant, and when would be the best time to plant them?
So, first off, I'm going to say the best time to plant them almost is if you can find them. A lot of times you can find fruit trees through catalog mail order companies, or you can find them in a nursery, and it may not be the right time to plant them, but you want to get them, and you can hold them for the summer if you're good at it, like a plant on your patio and then plant them in the fall. Fall is generally the better time to plant them. One of the best ones for this area is one called a jujube. Have you ever heard of a jujube?
No, actually, I haven't.
Okay. So a jujube is what they call a Chinese date. It looks like a date, but it's not really a date, but it tastes kind of like an apple. And they're really good, and they can be really sweet. And the plant doesn't have any bugs, and it's extremely drought-tolerant.
Wonderful.
It forms a small tree, so you can make it like a shade tree as well. And they're highly prized in the Chinese culture, but it's one of the best fruits for here.
A jujube.
Okay. A jujube.
How do you spell that?
J-U-J-U-B-E.
Perfect.
Yeah. And then we grow a lot of the standard fruits as well, but, you know, they're not native, and they're not all that drought tolerant, so you got to have regular watering on all your fruit trees.
Joy, thank you very much. Yes, you got something else? All right. Thank you, Joy, for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Let us go to Mary. Mary, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. What's on your mind, Mary?
I have a pomegranate bush, and my husband used to pick the fruit, and I'm not sure how to tell whether they're ripe, even though they're nice and red now.
Yeah, this is about the time to be picking up. You don't have to wait till they split open. So if you got a bunch of them, I would suggest taking one off the tree, as long as it's, you know, big and red, and opening it up and checking it, because if you wait too long and they split open, then you're going to get fungus in there and bacterial, and the bugs will come into it.
Oh, so, sure.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Pomegranates are an excellent
I love pomegranates. It's a beautiful tree, and I just love the taste of pomegranates.
One of the great things is you can take pomegranate seed, knock them out of there, and put them in plastic bags and directly freeze them.
Oh.
They're great on top of ice cream.
Oh, wow.
Well, how about that? No, I've made the juice out of them, but I haven't heard about that before. And may I ask you another question?
Sure,
I
what you got?
I also have oleander and a fig bush, and I've been watering them 3 times a week during the summer, well, from April. And I was wondering if I need to change that during the fall and winter months.
Yeah, generally you would change it. It highly depends on your soil type. If you got sandy, you know, you got to watch it doesn't get too dry. But those roots are alive in the soil. A lot of people completely quit watering in the wintertime, and that's actually wrong, because those roots being alive, they still need water.
Sure.
So a soaking once a month should suffice if they're well-established plants.
Is that all 3 of those?
Yes.
The pomegranate, the fig, and the oleander?
Yes.
Soak them well.
Right.
All righty.
And that's in the winter.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. I'm Edmundo Resendez. My guest is Jeff Anderson. He is an agricultural agent with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. You can join us at 575-646-2212 or join us on social media where Anthony Moreno is standing by. You can watch us live stream the show on Facebook Live, and check out some of the beautiful plants that Jeff Anderson has brought in to plant in the fall and through the winter. Let us go to Idea. Welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. You are on with Jeff. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, you did not.
Okay, what's your name?
Idella.
Idella, okay.
Yes. We filled in our swimming pool with crusher finds, and we've got about, 12 to 18 inches from the deck level. And I need to know, how do we go about building organic soil on top of that?
Well, one of the best ways, are you in Las Cruces here first?
Yes, we are.
One of the best ways is that the city gives away free organic mulch. And that's one of the best ways to start. So it's already been partially broken down there and building an organic soil. And you said you had crusher fines in there?
Yes, we have about 6 feet deep of crusher fines, so it's a pretty solid mass.
Okay. So hopefully, you know, was your swimming pool cracked at the bottom so water will drain out, I hope?
No, but it had a sand bottom. It was a plastic lined.
Okay.
So it had good drainage when the plastic's removed.
Okay. So my big worry would be that if it had no water outlet at the bottom and it perched the water table in there, you could get salt buildup. But as long as it drains through and you can flush the salts through, just adding the organic matter and sand, pure good sand, but you already got crusher fines, so that should suffice for building up a pretty decent soil as it breaks down.
All right, good. And just the mulch, nothing else. Grass clippings, chopped leaves.
What are you going to use it for?
Well, I'd like to put out a pergola and a fountain and then have some permanent plantings.
In there, some
flowering. Maybe some trumpet vines, since they do extremely well in my soil here.
Okay.
And maybe rosemary, because that does extremely well at my house, too.
Okay. So, you know, you might want to consider like a bamboo, since it's in a pool and won't escape, because sometimes bamboo can get spreading out too far.
Ah.
And there's some interesting bamboos. But building up a soil, like I said, should be sufficient for that.
Okay. And the 18 inches is going to be a deep enough organic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Most roots of most plants are in the top 2 to 3 feet of the soil.
Very good. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you for joining us. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Pat. Pat, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential, the fall edition. What's on your mind, Pat?
I have water hyacinths in my fish pond, and they're not blooming this year, and they didn't bloom last year either.
Okay. I'm not an expert on water hyacinths. They are tropical, and I know in waterways they're extremely invasive, and I was down at Lake Chapala in Mexico, and it's one of the biggest problems for the lake there, that they completely cover the lake and shut out all the light and the fish die.
Yeah.
But they are pretty in a garden setting, and I'm not sure what they actually need. They may need a long growing season, or hard to say. I haven't researched up on water hyacinth, what makes them bloom.
Okay. We've had them before, and they bloomed, but the last few years they haven't. We put barley straw in the water the last 2 years. Would that have anything to do with it?
It could be that the barley straw is removing excess nitrogen in there and some of the nutrition. And I know where I have seen them grow, the water was kind of polluted with excess fertilizers, and that really caused them to bloom a lot. But then that's toxic to fish. So.
Right. Okay. Okay.
All right, Pat, thank you for joining us on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We've got lots of calls, and of course, we've got lots of social media questions. So let us go to our social media desk, where Anthony Moreno is standing by. Anthony, what are people saying on social media?
Well, Edmundo, we have several people joining us on KRWG Public Media's Facebook page, watching the Gardening Confidential Live. Jeff, we have a question from Barry, who wants to know, how do you get rid of Bermuda grass?
Okay, that's not so hard. A lot of people think getting rid of Bermuda grass is very difficult, but it seriously isn't. It's just persistence. So if you got a big lawn or even a small lawn, I've done it several times, got rid of the whole wild Bermuda grass lawn. First off, you need to water it really well. So at the end of the rainy season, about this time in September, where we've had, if we had enough rain, that's a good thing. You need to water the grass to stimulate it so it's growing actively. That's important, because if the grass is growing actively, the stomates are open on the plant. That's where they breathe through it, and they're able to take in chemical. And the chemical of choice for this is actually Roundup. The thing about it is, you need to go out and spray and cover as best you can the areas. If you put in a dye in your Roundup, you know where you've sprayed. And it's going to go on to the grass, and you're not going to see any dye back for 7, 10, 12 days. Then it'll start turning yellow. But the whole thing is, you need to go out there every 10 days and spray it with Roundup. And you got to water it. So you don't want to water it right after you spray it, of course, so that the chemical soaks in. But you got to water it like you're trying to grow the grass, and you got to spray it every 10 days. And going into the fall, like September right now, is the best time of year to do it, because the grass is going to be going dormant. So it's going to pull the chemical into the root system. Bermuda grass roots can go up to 5 feet deep. So, you know, pulling it out and chopping it out with a hoe doesn't work really well. You have to be real persistent. You could do it organically by plowing it up continuously and removing any green that grows. But if you do it chemically, you can wipe it out and it will die and it'll have no energy going into the winter. And then it goes dormant. And then it has no reserves over winter to keep it alive. And in the spring, you might get a little tuft here and there that might come back. You hit those right away, and you've actually wiped out a whole Bermuda grass lawn or problem. Trouble is, if you have plants mixed in that grass, like trees and shrubs, you don't want to kill them. So you got to find a way to keep the Bermuda or keep the Roundup off of those plants. So Roundup does have a place. I know a lot of people don't like Roundup, but it does have a place for certain aspects.
Jeff, you mentioned winter. We have a question from Brianna who asks, are there any vegetables that will grow and thrive through the winter here?
Yes. Most of the coal crops, and that's not cold crops, not C-O-L-D, it's C-O-L-E, coal crops, and that's cabbage and kale and cauliflower. Now, they're a little sensitive down to below 25 degrees, but you can cover them up. So they may not thrive through the winter, but that's one group. Some of the better ones are Swiss chard. So if you like eating Swiss chard's pretty tough and will go through the winter just fine. If you started carrots and beets a little earlier, you can actually hold them in the ground over winter and just keep picking them till early spring. But you got to pick them before spring because they'll bolt and flower and then they're no good. There are different lettuces that you can do, especially if you have some cold frame, a little bit of protection, and spinach. Spinach is in there too.
Okay, and we also have another question from someone who commented on our Facebook page about what is the best cover crop for restoring soil vitality?
Well, you know, in this area here, I would think I would go with an annual ryegrass. I think it produces a lot of mass. It grows very quickly. It will grow through the winter and cool season. So it's going to start dying out when it gets hot. You can either leave it or plow it into the soil, or you can just kill it, let it die, and let it work as a cover for your soil, especially in the spring, so that you don't have soil erosion with the wind blowing.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We are live streaming the show on Facebook. You can join in on the conversation on Facebook Live. You can like KRWG and watch the show live. We've got the news that's going to be coming up in just a bit. Want to let you know that all the calls that are waiting, we'll get to you after the news. But right now, we've got some calls, Jeff. Let us go to Elliot. Elliot, welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. You are on with Jeff Anderson.
Yeah, I've been using this potassium polyacrylamide. I can't even say the name of it. It's for absorbing water. And I have a container garden. And I've had the best success, the most productive garden this year that I've ever had. And I'm in the city, so I'm on the city watering schedule. So this stuff really works in terms of storing water. But I'm suspicious of it because I'm wondering over the long term, what's it going to do to the soil or if it gets loose from the containers?
As far as I know, it's not going to do anything. It'll just break down. So I don't think there's any problems with that particular product.
Okay.
So I don't think there's anything to worry about there.
All right. Well, for anybody else, if there's no hidden cost to using it, I couldn't recommend this better, more. If for anybody that's container gardening, because it really helps.
Right. It's worked well for homeowners and that, but on a large scale, it would be much too expensive for most people to utilize that way. But on a small scale, it's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Elliot. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Roy, you are on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. You're on with Jeff. What's up, Roy?
I have a question about shrubs that will provide berries for robins and waxwings and other birds in the late winter. I used to have some big pyracanthus that the robins depended on. That was killed in the very deep freeze that we had a few years back. And I would like to know what variety of pyracantha would be good for replacing it. And also, I've seen the Texas yaupon that's planted alongside the library at UTEP. And I noticed the waxwings and the robins really love those berries in the spring. I wondered if that would do well here in the the Mesilla Park area.
Yes, yaupon holly does very well here. It's a native of Texas, but it also does well here, and it produces berries. We have a lot of different birds that migrate through here, so we do have robins. I don't think I've seen the waxwings. It's interesting to know that, but a lot of our birds are deserty type birds, and they're not always familiar with those berries that we have. But pyracantha is an excellent one. I know a lot of birds that do eat it, and it's if yours died, it's worth planting back. And virtually any of the varieties are fine here. I knew I grew one called cherry berry, and the smaller berries, I had trouble. They never turned red because the birds ate them when they were still green.
Okay.
And so I grew it for the berries, but I didn't get to enjoy the berries. The birds ate them.
I think that... in that very deep freeze we had, I think that mine died because I had watered them a couple of days before that cold front came in. Do you have any comments about wintertime care for the pyracanthus?
Yeah, so watering them before that freeze came really didn't have anything to do with it. It would not have helped whether you didn't water it or you watered it. Probably more so if you watered it would have helped. But the freeze occurred on February 3rd, 2011, and we went from fairly mild temperatures to way below zero. And at that time of the year, all of our plants practically were breaking dormancy. So it didn't matter how cold hardy the plants were. Once they break dormancy, it's almost like they're tropical plants now because they lose all their cold hardy properties. And then having that freeze, which was huge swing, was just devastating. So I saw huge Aleppo pines that were probably a good 70 feet tall with 3 to 4 foot trunks freeze solid to the ground.
Wow.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Rory. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let's talk about compost. Is now a good time to start doing your compost for the spring?
Any time is a good time to do compost, any time you have it. So, you know, you have cleanup all winter, you have things that happen all summer, things that need to be trimmed back. And I've done compost. I kind of do what they call compost heaps, so I just compost in place and move it around a little bit. I don't actually have a compost pile. And any of the large items that I have that I can't compost in my yard because I live in town, I take it to the city of Las Cruces for composting there. And I feel really good about that because the city will compost it and then give it away free so the public has access to that.
Where can people get some of this?
You can get the compost on the East Mesa. So if you go up Loman there all the way to the east and then you get to the corner, I think it's Sonoma Ranch, and you take a right there, and just on your left, there is the city recycling center for yard waste. And it's a great place. They have compost there now anytime. Works out wonderfully.
575-646-2212. This is KRWG's Gardening Confidential. I'm Edmundo Resendez. We are wrapping up hour number one, but we've got hour number two coming up after the news. If you have questions or comments, give us a call. Join us on social media. This is KRWG Las Cruces, KRXG Silver City, broadcasting live from the beautiful campus at New Mexico State University.